enjoy the music while you're being connected. Hello.
Okay, you there?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Okay, I got you.
Okay.
Just a second.
Now, let me ask you all it now. The phone number that I put on my wall, people just call in and that's how they can hear.
Yes, they're on the line with us.
Now, let me ask you all it now. The phone number that I put on my wall.
Okay, are you still there?
I'm here.
Okay. Good evening, you guys. This is Red Journal Radio. I want to welcome everyone who's listening in. My name is Salita McCall. I am your host.
People and just call in, and that's how they can hear.
Yes, they're on the line with us.
Yeah. Let me ask you.
Okay, you guys. I'm sorry. Hold up. I'm sorry, you guys. It's replaying itself.
I'm here.
Okay. Good evening, you guys. This is Red Journal Radio. I want to welcome everyone who's listening in. My name is Salita McCall. I am your host.
People just call in, and that's how they can hear.
Yes, they're on the line. Okay, you guys. I'm sorry. Hold up. I'm sorry.
Oh, we have technical difficulties.
And I'm telling you, I never have this. This is it. Let me do this. I'm gonna close all the way out, and then we're gonna come back in again. Okay.
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 Okay. Oh, we have technical difficulties.
Exactly. Okay, let's see if we can do this again. Let me do this. I'm gonna close all the way out, and then we're gonna come back in again. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Let's try this again. Okay.
We have technical difficulties.
Exactly. Okay. Let's see if we can do this again. Let me do this. I'm going to close all the way out, and then we're going to come back in again, okay?
Okay.
I do not believe this. Okay. All right. So let me call her again. Let's call the guest again.
Okay. Enjoy the music while you're being connected. Hello.
All right. I am so sorry for that.
That's okay.
You guys, you're at Journal Radio. I'm your host, Salita McCall, and what they've done is they've kind of revamped this whole program. So a lot of things that are happening, they have to fix them as we tell them to fix them. So that was something that I'm going to have to report. The problems that we're having with this. This is not the first time this has happened. Anyway, so I want to say good evening to everyone tonight. Thank you for listening in to Red Journal Radio, where you can hear the most strangest things and the most educational things and the most enlightening things here. So tonight we have a great, great, great guest tonight. A very wonderful lady I got an opportunity to meet in person, and I'm so glad I did. Her name is Ms. Royce Eckley, and she's out of Katy, Texas, and we're here tonight to talk about something that is so dear to her heart, her only son. His name was Marcus Anthony Merritt, and he passed away on January the 4th of 2013. Well, as you know, most of the time when things happen, it's supposed to happen in a succession of steps. Situations are supposed to be taken care of as they go. Well, in her case and in her son's case, a lot of stuff was not done. There was a lot of unresolved issues in her son's death. And we're here tonight to allow her to talk about what happened and what is going to be the result of what she found when she did her own investigation. And this is a mother that has a true heart and who is very much so wanting answers to what happened to her son. And, you know, we can't always go by what just anybody tells us, because lots of times what anybody tells us, not necessarily, even though they wear a badge, that it's the truth. And they might sound official, but we find out that a lot of stuff has loopholes, and a lot of people that are in positions that are not, that shouldn't be, or don't know what they're doing. So tonight I'm going to give her the mic, and I want her to talk about her story, and I'm going to interject any in between some of the conversation to get her to get to be able to get everybody who's calling in or who's listening in to understand where we're coming from. Now, good evening, Miss Royce. How are you this afternoon, sweetie? This evening, that is.
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing great. Now, Miss Royce, I would like for you to tell our listening audience the story about your son and what led up to his death, if you don't mind.
What led? Now you'll have to explain what that.
When I say what because what led up to him, his death is what I'm saying is why, from what point did this end result in him dying? What came in between the ideal, the end result being that he's dead? That's what we mean led up to his death.
Well, honestly, I don't know what led up to his death. I mean, the way you're posing that question, I can't answer that. It's like you're asking me.
Okay.
Because I honestly don't know what led up to his death.
Okay, let me try to rephrase it. What are the circumstances?
Okay.
What are the situations that led up to what happened to him in the end? It's what I'm basically trying to say.
Are you asking me like what I have been told?
Exactly.
Because, oh, okay. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
I was told that on January 4th, 2013, I received a phone call that said, I think Mark just did something to himself. And I was like, no, I mean, why? Why would you think something like that? And then the response was, because we were texting, and now I can't get him to answer. And I said, well, you know how he is. He's just not answering. And it made no sense to me because, I mean, that's how he would do sometimes. He just wouldn't answer. And a matter of fact, I might be texting with him and talking to him, and he'd go in the store and say, Mama, I'll call you right back when I leave out of the store. Well, I'd hear from him like 4 or 5 days later, and I'd say, well, you stayed in that store a long time. So it didn't alarm me that he was not answering.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and then I was told that at that time she was leaving work, and she had called her parents. And they were going to go check to see if they could get him to answer. And I, you know, put her on hold, and I called. And of course, I was saying, you know, please answer, because by this time, something inside, you know, I just kind of started trembling inside, and I could sense something's not right, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I'm used to him not answering, something isn't right about this.
Okay.
And
okay.
He didn't answer.
Okay, I have a question. You said she. Who
mm-hmm.
is the she?
His wife.
Okay. Okay. And at the time, you're saying that you were on the phone with her when this incident?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Cool. I was on the phone with her when she was supposedly leaving work and on the way home to take the key to her parents to go in the house to see if they could check to see why, you know, why Mark wasn't answering.
Okay. So when she got to the house, okay, she left and went to go get a set of keys so that she can go into the house and check on Mark or send someone in the house to check on Mark. Now, at this time, was the police called? There was there any 911 call made?
I have no idea because I wasn't there. I live in Texas, and this happened in Louisiana.
Okay.
All I was told was that he wouldn't, they were texting, and now she couldn't get him to answer, and so she had called her parents to go to the house, and she was taking the key. So I had, you know, no mention of 911 being called or anything was said to me at that point.
Okay. Now, once they got to the house and they got inside, what was it that they told you happened? What was the situation?
I was told that he had taken his own life. And that's what I was told, that her parents went inside the house and found Mark laying next to the bed, that he had taken his own life.
Okay. Now, let's talk about the parents in this situation. And we know that there was only two statements taken. The statement of the wife was never taken, right? From what we know.
The wife's statement
was never taken. Okay. Now, who were you told was on the scene after they found Marcus's body? Who was on the scene? Who came? Who was there? Who touched? Who did the investigation on the scene?
I was told, like, at first, while I was still on the telephone, it was only she and her parents that were there.
Okay.
And then, you know, later on, I was told the ambulance was on scene, police were on scene, sheriff's department was there, the death investigator was there, and, you know, all of these people were supposedly there. That's what I was told after the fact. But when I was on the telephone with her, I didn't hear any of those people.
Wow. Okay. Now this is a question I have in my mind. What would make Marcus want to take his life?
The Marcus that I know, there's nothing that would have made him want to do that. I mean, he had no reason. I know people take their lives, but somebody would be able to give you a why, or somebody would question, you know, if they really did. But Mark was full of life, and he loved his kids too much to leave them like that. I mean, you know, he loved his family also, but he had no reason to take his life. He was looking forward to, from what I've since found out, starting a job, moving back to Texas. So there was no reason for him to take his life.
Now, how did you find out about him moving back to Texas? Was that something you and him discussed?
No, I found out from his best friend Steve.
Okay.
That that he had, they had talked about it, done the figures and everything, and that his brother had gotten him a job, and he was starting the end of January.
So we can say that the marriage was no longer relevant to a certain extent. I mean, was it that he was going to move on with his life? He was going to probably have to get a divorce, the whole nine yards. That's where he was in his mind at that time, do you think? And was the reason, would that be the reason why he was leaving?
It's a possibility, but I don't, you know, like I said, I have no idea what was, you know, what, if he was considering divorce or any of that. I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, all I know is that if he was planning on coming back to Texas, and if he was coming alone, then something was going on. You know, maybe a separation or what have you, and I don't know where that would have led. But it, as far as me knowing, you know, if he was going to get a divorce, I can't honestly answer that because I don't know.
Okay. Now, when it was time for the funeral, can you tell me kind of what happened when you came down for the funeral and what was your decision?
Yes, when I went there, I had the intention, you know, because Mark was from Texas, and so mm-hmm. I wanted to bring him home, you know, from the where he lived.
Uh-huh.
And I went in the room and, you know, spoke to his wife and told her that I wanted to bring him back home, and she just looked at me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but, I mean, she didn't say yes, she didn't say no, she just, you know, she just kind of looked at me, but I didn't take that as being a no. And so I went in the kitchen and I told her mother, you know, that I had wanted to take Mark home, and she asked, had I spoken to her, and I said yes, and, you know, I said she didn't say anything different. And, you know, I asked for the phone number of the funeral home, and she gave it to me, and I called. And the lady that I spoke with asked me, she said, well, have you talked to his wife? And I said, yes, I just did. And she didn't, you know, she didn't have any objections to it. And so then that's when that the funeral home employee said, well, she would have the funeral director call me back.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was like, okay, so I kept wondering, you know, like different things went on, and we went to her grandmother's and stuff like that, and I kept wondering, you know, if he had ever called, because I had called from her mother's phone,
mm-hmm.
and eventually she told me that he had called back, and I was like, well, you know, you didn't let me talk to him. And she was like, oh, well, you know, it's like she was still indecisive of what, you know, what she was going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so the next day, I think it was, my fiance at the time needed to come back home because it all happened on the weekend, and he had notified work. And so he left, and, you know, he kissed her and told her he was leaving me there, and because I had packed enough to that I was staying until whenever I would leave.
Uh-huh.
And so he kissed her and told her that he was leaving, and everything was fine. I told him, you know, let me walk him outside, and I walked outside with him. And when I came back in the house, it was a totally different atmosphere.
Uh-huh.
Excuse me, I could cough. I'm sorry. And like I walked in and I didn't know what was going on. I literally held my hands up and said, what, you know, what happened? You know, what's wrong with her? And, you know, because it was like she was hysterical. She's taking him, you know, it's not fair. What about me and my children? You know, and I'm like, what is wrong? What are you talking about? And she just kept repeating the same thing. And then I told her, I said, I'm not taking him anywhere. I'd say I'd want to take him home. He's not from here. You know, I want to take him home where he grew up. And of course, that wasn't to be, because her dad chimed in and said, well, she's made her decision. She's his wife. And I said, and I'm his mother.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm in hostile territory.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how that went.
Okay, so he So, in other words, you were not able to take him home when you wanted to?
No.
Okay. Now, after you got back home, after everything got settled, well, before then, now, when you went, tell me what happened when you went to the funeral home. Can you kind of give us some information on what happened when you went to the funeral home?
Yes. I wanted to see Mark, and so we, this was on that Monday, and so we had gotten the clothes, she had the clothes, and I had gotten his underwear and stuff, and my cousins and I and her mother went up there, and I was, like, we was, you know, sitting there waiting, and then Pastor Ford, you know, stepped in and said, follow him, and I stopped when I got to the door because, I thought I was getting ready to see him, you know, like, in a coffin or whatever, and when I rounded the corner, I just stopped because he was laying on the table with a, with that sheet, and I just stopped at the door for a minute, and my cousin asked me, she said, are you going to go in? And I said, yes, I'm going in, and but I'll, from being told what I had been told, I stood there because I was like, this is going to be awful, and I will never forget what I'm going to see, you know, because I figured he'd be disfigured and everything. And so I walked up to the table, and there was nothing wrong with him. I mean, he looked just like he was just sleeping. And I just stood there, you know, but it was like I could hear my voice in my head trying to make out what I was seeing, you know, because I could just hear my own voice in my head saying, Mark, I don't understand what I'm looking at. I don't understand what is this, you know. And so we were in there for a little bit, and then we went on and left. And I just, you know, like I said, I couldn't, from what I, like I said, what I had been told, there was nothing wrong with him physically that I could see.
Uh-huh.
And so I couldn't understand that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So,
and then we left.
Okay. So you didn't see any proof of what they claim he did to himself?
No, I didn't.
Okay, did anybody else see that?
Not the five of us that were standing there. I mean, me and my two cousins didn't. They didn't step all the way into the room, but they were standing right there and they could see. Now, I don't know what she and her mother would describe that they saw. I mean, they had to have seen the same thing I did. They were standing right next to me. But no, there was nothing wrong with him. I mean, there was nothing wrong with his face. There was nothing wrong with his head. There was, he looked just like I could touch him and say, let's go home. And he would get up. It was nothing wrong.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so with all this right now, and I know going through your head at that moment, you knew then that something's not right. So when you, after the funeral and you went back home, you sat down and you thought, you know, I know as a mother losing your son, a lot was going through your head, but you just didn't feel like this is the end. It had to be more to it. What made you go to the steps that you're at now? When I say now, the ideal that you've gone as far as you've gone to get the justice for your son, the ideal that you don't think the way that they said he passed away was the true way that he passed away.
Right. Well, actually, it was like not immediately when I got back home. I I had no reason to believe other than what I had been told, you know. Mm. And so it was like a little part of me, you know, like wondered. It didn't make sense or whatever. But what really made me think that, hey, something's not right about this. His wife and I were extremely close.
Mm-hmm.
Not like the traditional mother-in-law, daughter-in-law. I mean, we talked every day, text every day, every night when she got off from work. I was on the phone with her. And, I thought about it and I realized, well, she hasn't called me to check to see if I've eaten, you know, if I'm okay or anything. I've been the one to call her, and sometimes she would get on the phone and sometimes she wouldn't. And I was like, well, you know, something's not right. And then that's when I started calling, you know, trying to get reports and, you know, from the police department. And I was told to get it from her. And, you know, when I said, well, she's not talking to me, he told me that there was nothing he could do to help me. And so I just started going from, you know, like department to department trying to get help to, you know, to get my questions answered. And it's like all I did was hit brick walls there. Nobody, it's like they circled the wagons or whatever. Nobody would help to get the answers that I was looking for.
Uh-huh. Okay, now talk about the officer that actually was the investigating officer and what he found and his story conflicts with other people's stories. So kind of talk about him, because he would be the first officer on the scene, am I right?
Repeat that. You cut out at the beginning. I'm sorry.
Okay. I said, can you kind of talk about the officer that was on the scene? Was he the first investigating officer, or was anybody else already there, another officer on the scene? From what you were
talking? No, when I finally got the police report, Anthony Darter was the first one that arrived on the scene. And, I finally received the police report. And, but there wasn't really anything in it, you know, per se, like you would think a police report would be. Like, it would describe what their findings were, you know, what they observed and all. But this police report really just went by what he was told by someone.
Oh, okay. Now, was a coroner on site at the time?
No. The death investigator was supposedly the one that that I received notes from. But when I spoke to the coroner a month later,
mm-hmm.
he told me that he never even saw Mark. And I asked him, I said, well, how can you sign something for a person that you never even saw?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, no one called you to tell you your son was killed. And I said, you just told me he killed himself, and that's two different things.
Wow. And what did he say when you said that?
He didn't say anything.
Wow. Okay, now another thing, too, we find out an autopsy wasn't done.
No, it wasn't. He was taken from the house to the funeral home, and with no obvious signs of death, that strikes me as odd. I mean, I could see if he was disfigured, you know, and it was just obvious to your eyes what had happened, but for someone to not have any outward signs of having shot themselves, you know, it would seem like you would want to know for sure what happened. But
mm-hmm.
no, he went from he didn't have an autopsy, which is very strange.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And since, like, everybody that I have talked to that has, you know, tried to help or just agencies that I have contacted to ask different questions, that's the first thing they ask me. Well, what did the autopsy report say? And when I tell them there wasn't one, they hesitate, and then, you know, they usually go, well, wait, what do you mean there wasn't one?
Wow. Now, who is Joseph Noel?
That's the chief of police.
Okay. Now, what is his position in this whole situation? Do you think he played a part in, I'm going to just outright say it, cover up?
I think so. I mean, my cousin was told that he was a personal family friend. So if it's sloppy police work or whatever is going on, there would have to be somebody that could, you know, make it like more difficult to find the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's been going on. It's been very, very difficult for me to try and find the truth.
Now, from what I've read, you were told to get a police report from the wife. But
right.
If the wife was not talking to you, what made them mm-hmm. continue to try to tell you to get it from her? Did they already know she wasn't talking to you?
I have no idea. I don't know because I mean I don't know why they would say get it from her, because that's their record. I mean, she's not a police officer, so I don't know why they would say get it from her, you know. But that's what I was told. And then when I contacted the attorney general's office and spoke with an agent, he said, no, you know, you don't need anybody's permission. Number one, you're his mother, you know, which gives you permission enough, he said. But then if they want to say, well, that's not good enough, you just ask for it under the Freedom of Information Act. And I told him, I said, he's not gonna give it to me. And he told me, he said, you call him back and you ask for it exactly like I'm telling you, that you want the police report under the Freedom of Information Act. And I did that, and he still didn't send it to me.
Wow. Now, let's talk about Earl Taylor. Who is Earl Taylor?
He's the district attorney of St. Landry Parish, and I had been emailing him and, you know, never got any response or anything, and calling, and then finally he called me back, and he told me that they had assigned an investigator, you know, to the case, and I was like, oh, okay, you know, could you give me his name? And he never told me his name, but he said he or his investigator would call me. Mm-hmm. And then I got a letter from him, and it stated that he had spoken with the chief of police, and the evidence clearly shows that your son died of a self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head with no exit. And I'm like, okay, wait. I was told he shot himself in the mouth. Head and mouth is two different things to me. I mean,
yeah.
Your mouth is located on your head, but, okay, now the area has changed. It's gone from his head to his mouth. I mean, from his mouth to his head.
Exactly.
But, you know, and I'm like, what evidence clearly shows? I mean, you could look at him, and there was no evidence. And, I mean, I've called and talked to so many people that I spoke to FBI agent, and she said, I'm not trying to be graphic with you because you're his mother. She said, but you would see evidence of a gunshot wound even if it was a BB gun. She said, I don't understand that. There would be evidence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So,
and there wasn't evidence. When you look at the whole situation, there was no evidence that he shot himself. especially either in the head, in the mouth, wherever, since they keep changing the positions or where
right.
it's supposed to happen.
Well, you know, that's odd that you said changing the position, because there were so many weird things going on, I guess, that day, because I was told he was found laying next to the bed, and someone else, two other people I know, were told he was found in the kitchen. So how did he get from the kitchen to the bedroom?
Unless somebody moved him, right?
Exactly.
Okay, we're going to take a break real quick here, and then we'll be back with Red Journal Radio Show. I'm Salita McCall, your host, and we're talking Ms. Royce Eckley. We're talking about the mysterious death of her son, Marcus Merritt. So we shall return, you guys.
It may be hard to believe, but people just like you are already saving money. FeedThePig.org makes it easy. Their simple savings plan teaches you how to start saving without going overboard. So you don't need to mooch off your friends.
You gonna finish that grape?
You mean the one in my mouth?
You don't need to stop buying the necessities.
What you're smelling is a natural musk.
Ew.
You don't need to be a medical test subject.
How do you feel?
Mostly okay. I... Sometimes, though.
You don't need to get a second job as a stuntman. You just need an internet connection. Don't get left behind. Start your personal savings plan with the tips and tools on feedthepig.org. That way, you don't need to sell your soul to the devil.
$15 is the best I can do.
All right, deal.
Brought to you by the American Institute of CPAs and the Ad Council.
Last night we put on an epic light show.
Yeah, we did.
The crowd loved us. We love the crowd.
Wait, but there were only four people out there.
Yeah, but did you see their four faces? All eight of their eyes lit up brighter than ours. And we're fireflies.
Yeah, we are.
Hey, that one girl, she looked like she'd never seen glow in the dark like this before, and we invented glow in the dark.
Yeah, we invented it.
And we're going to be out here every night rocking out our light show at a forest near you.
Woohoo!
So come check us out.
Check us out.
And bring your kid, all ages show. Oh, but don't bring any of those glass jars, because they make us kind of nervous.
Yeah, and I'm super claustrophobic.
Whether you're rocking their world or they're rocking yours, some memories never fade. Come alive with the forest. Visit discovertheforest.org to find a forest near you. And discover other cool things to do when you go, like fishing, biking, or even camping. Visit discovertheforest.org.
See you later!
Yeah, see you soon!
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Hello, you guys. We're back with Red Journal Radio. I'm your host, Salita, and we're talking to Mrs. Royce Eckley of Katy, Texas. We're talking about the mysterious death of her son, Marcus Merritt, who passed away on January the 4th, 2013. Now, let's talk about a little bit about after all of this happened, you spoke with someone at Acadian Ambulance, which is our ambulance service here in Louisiana, because I'm here. I'm about an hour and a half away from where the incident happened. So I'm just letting the audience know that. So tell me a little bit about who you spoke to at Acadian Ambulance when you needed a report. You were asking for the police report or what?
Right. I was.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No,
I was asking for, I'm sorry, I was asking for the, you know, I guess like the ambulance report or anything, you know, so I could see what they had to say. And so I called Acadian Ambulance and, FBI agent asked me that. He said, "Have you gotten the ambulance report or talked to anybody there?" And I said, "No." And he said, "I'd be interested to know what they said." And so I said, "Okay." So I called them, and I spoke with Kathy, and I told her, you know, I asked her, could I get the records? And she said, you know, of course, if I have any, I can, you know, I can send them to you. So she asked for the Mark's name and the date, you know, what happened and the address. And I gave her all that. And then she couldn't find it, and she, you know, she said, well, let me try something else, and then, you know, she was like, okay, it pulled up, and she said, well, I see a 911 call, and then she went, and I, you know, after all this going on that I've been calling numerous places and all, I knew, well, here we go with something. And I asked her, I said, what's the matter? And she said, well, all it says is police on scene, no further info available. And she said, I've input different codes and everything to try and generate, you know, a report that will have a dispatch time, an arrival time, you know, anything that would generate a report, and nothing pulls up. And I said, well, what does that mean? And she said, well, then that would mean no ambulance was dispatched. And I was like, oh, okay, then, well, thank you. Well, in the meantime, I continued, you know, like Googling just different things, you know, agencies and just, you know, blindly trying to find help or whatever. And I Googled a, like the TV stations and all of this, and a lady in Lake Charles answered me. And well, and then another station in, I guess, closer to that city answered. And she was like, would you, you know, she and I had gone back and forth, and, you know, from what she was reading that I was telling her, she was like, that's, you know, that's very strange. So she asked, could I come out there? And she did, she does a segment called I Want to Know, and, you know, talk to me. And so I went out there and she did that. Well, she called the, coroner and Joseph Noel, the chief of police, and she must have told Joseph Noel, well, she called the ambulance service, and, you know, what I was told. Well, within a little bit later, she gets a fax with this transcript of, you know, I guess you would call radio chatter or whatever from that day, and this you know, showing like that they had called an ambulance. And so then from that, I called Acadia an ambulance back, and, you know, I spoke to a Charlotte, and she, you know, sent me an email that would expire within, I think it was like 24 or 48 hours after I would open the link to get this, what the form says, pre-hospitalization intake form or whatever like that. And I'm like, well, that's odd, because he never went to a hospital. But anyway, so I get that, and I ask Charlotte, I said, well, I called and talked to Kathy, and, you know, this didn't exist. I said, you know, do you know why? And she was like, oh, well, maybe, I don't know, maybe it wasn't in the computer yet. And I said, so you mean it took over a year and a half for this to get input into the computer? Because this was a year and a half later that this materialized.
A whole year and a half later that they contacted it was, you?
No, they didn't contact me. It was over a year and a half later that this report and all existed. Because I had contacted them, and there wasn't one.
Wow. Okay, now, on that same line, let's talk about the 911 call that was supposed to have happened and didn't. And you requested, what did you request for the 911 call? Did you request a transcript, or did you request a recording?
No, actually, I had just asked for you know, evidence of the ambulance being there.
Okay.
And then and then this is when Teresa received this fax with all of this radio chatter on there, you know, you know, about who's being advised of traffic and you know, what they're supposedly doing and all that. I hadn't asked for that. I had asked for something from the ambulance service.
So they, that this is a transcript, which actually, I've never seen a 911 call transcript before. I just know what a recording sounds like. So this, when, as me and Miss Eckley had an opportunity to sit down and look at some of the stuff that she found or the stuff that was sent to her, the evidence or whatever you want to call it, if that's what they want to call it. but I've never seen a transcript of a 911 call. And I was thinking and because the listening audience can't see what we see, is the ideal that I thought maybe it would have the name of the person who got called in, what was said, the person who called, the names, maybe even the address of the people, because once you call a when you call a dispatch in a 911 call, it tells you exactly, they know exactly where you live and all, you know, all your information. So none of that was on the transcript. So we were curious about that because none of that was on the transcript. Now, let's talk about also on the report or the summary that you got from Acadian Ambulance where it stated the condition of your son's body. Let's talk about that.
Let's talk about that.
What was their finding when they found it? Then we're going to go back. And we're not trying to confuse you guys. We're trying to make sure you guys understand what we found that sound very suspicious. Now, let's talk about what the summary states that your son was, what condition he was found in.
Okay.
Go ahead.
You have that. The echo is going.
Okay, I'm sorry. I don't know why, but can you hear me?
I can hear you, but I can also hear myself. Everything I say, it comes back to me.
Oh, okay. I'm going to have to tell them about that then. I'm sorry. But did you hear what I said?
Yes.
Okay.
Like on the very first line, it says dead prior to arrival. And then you come on down and it's like, describing not really the condition of him or whatever. It was like it has breathing apnea. And so I have a friend he's been in law enforcement over 30 years, but he was also a paramedic. And so I was like, I don't really understand what I'm reading. And so I sent him this transcript thing, and I also sent the pre-hospitalization thing. So I, you know, because like I said, I'm not in that line of work, so I didn't know, you know, I didn't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And because when at first I was reading it to him, and he said, "No, send it to me because that's not making sense." And I said, "Why?" And he said, "Because what you just said to me," he said, "apneic breathing is hesitant breathing. It's hesitant breath, you know, like people with sleep apnea."
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay. And so then you get to another line and it tells you, I forget what the initials are, but they stand for like voice, it was AVPU or something like that. It's, you know, like if you can hear, if you're responsive and, you know, think to them maybe talking to you and stuff like that. Well, next to that, they have unconscious. And I'm like, wait a minute. I went, you know, back to the first page and I'm like, okay, yeah, that still says what I thought it said at the top. And, you know, it's like, this isn't making sense, okay? If they're saying that he was deceased prior to arrival, number one, why come? I mean, I guess ambulances will go, you know, but if you're telling them that they've obviously passed away, they usually send a coroner. They, you know, they don't send an ambulance.
Exactly.
And so then when you get to the, like they didn't describe any injuries to his face or anything. They just, it said that he was next to the bed and the nightstand, and he was cool, which I still don't understand, because all of this supposedly happened within minutes. Like, you know, she couldn't get him to answer, and, you know, and her parents getting there and all of this. So all of this supposedly happened within minutes. A person's body does not cool off that fast.
Exactly.
So, you know, they describe him as being cool. They describe dried blood on him. You know, blood doesn't dry that fast.
Exactly.
And then when you get to the end, they have reason he couldn't sign was unconscious. Well, I mean, that's why I say all of this is very confusing to me, because if either he was deceased prior to arrival, like you said, or he had apneic breathing and was unconscious. And if all of that is going on, where is he?
Exactly. And then he was cool to the touch and unconscious, so he couldn't sign the paperwork. So it's like, he can't be all of these.
No.
How can he be all of these and still be dead prior to arrival? It doesn't add up. And anybody, I think, even not only just you being a mother, anybody who would be looking at this paperwork would be like, wait a minute, something's not
adding up.
You have a lot of uneducated people that don't know what they're doing, or you have people who manipulated the paperwork but didn't know how to manipulate it, because if they knew how to manipulate the paperwork, one main thing they wouldn't have said is that his temperature was cool and he had some type of breathing. You wouldn't have said those things on there if he was already passed away. Now, you guys want to follow the story now. We just made a statement about his body temperature. Now, Ms. Eckley, let's talk about the statements, the only two statements that was received from the police department, that the mother and the father of the wife was actually, you know, they were the only two that made a statement. So let's talk about that.
Right. And the statements that I received finally from that, and I just got this like about 4 or 5 months ago, maybe, and this is now going on 3 years, and I just got this, you know, paperwork, but their statement conflict each other, because the father is saying him and the wife went in the house, and that's just how he describes it, you know, me and the wife, that they went in the house and found Mark, but hers is that the father stayed outside with the wife, but her mother's goes on to describe how she was trying to get a pulse on him. She, you know, she felt for a carotid pulse and all of this, and his skin was warm to the touch. Well, if he was warm right then when she was touching him, how did he wind up cool a few minutes later when the ambulance supposedly got there?
Yeah, that doesn't add up. That does not add up. Like I said, and then with the idea that they weren't supposed to be inside, someone had to come and escort them outside, which means they could have went in there tampered with evidence, but because they weren't looking for evidence, they wouldn't have never known that, right?
Right. Well, and then, you know, like it doesn't make sense, because how can someone shoot themselves and then they lay the gun and the phone on the bed and they wind up somewhere else? That's not possible.
Yes. And the ideal, too, and I don't know if any of the callers can understand why we're saying this. Describe to us the size of Marcus and how where they said they found him is almost gravitationally impossible.
Yeah. Mark was like 6'2", 200 and something pounds. And see, like when I asked her mother three questions when I was there. I asked, was he sitting? Did he leave a note? And were his eyes closed? And she said, no, she started out and she said, well, no, it wasn't horrible, you know, when we went in, you know, and I'm looking at her like, how can it not be? And she said, he was laying next to the bed, and no, he didn't leave a note, and that she closed his eyes. Well, then when I start getting all this paperwork, number one, with all this paperwork, it's like the thing that gets it is his wife called me at 6:17 p.m. Now, time usually goes 6:17, 6:18, 6:19. Everything, Salida, starts at 6:17. When she called me, the reports I have, everything, like some of it, of course, is in military time, 18:17, but everything starts then. So that means she was on the phone with me. Supposedly, her parents are calling 911, but everybody can't call at the same time. It's
exactly.
If she's calling me, the time has to change.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like nothing makes sense. You know, it not only does not make sense to me, it doesn't make sense to a lot of people that have seen it.
Mm-hmm. So if he, so they're describing.
Oh, but I'm sorry. Yeah, but Mark was, you know, he was big. I mean, he wasn't fat.
Yeah.
He was just big and solid. But mm-hmm. she said he was laying next to the bed, and then everything that I started getting was telling me he was like he was sitting between the nightstand and the bed. And I'm like, why would Mark, big as he is, was wedge himself between the nightstand and the bed? It wasn't that much room between it. And then it's even described as appears subject was leaning on bed when shot. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. Shouldn't that say when he shot himself and slid off? No, that is gravitationally not, you can't do that. If you're laying on a bed or you're laying on something, if you slide off, when you slide off, you're going to slide off and, you know, wind up laying. You're not going to wind up sitting.
Exactly. And another thing, also, the ideal that if you guys could have seen the reports, where they're not consistent. This is the problem with this whole situation. They're not
mm-hmm.
consistent. Everybody's
right.
telling a different story, but they all were supposed to be at the scene.
Right.
From the officer to the coroner to everybody has a different story. And it's not
right.
supposed to be that way if they all was there and everybody
right.
knew what happened and they were part of it. They should be able to tell a story that all would be just one whole smooth story that adds up to the same thing. And this is the problem with this whole story, this whole situation, is that the stories are so inconsistent. The mother's report or statement wasn't taken till that Monday. This happened on a Friday. Her statement wasn't taken till Monday, and she was right there on the scene. Why did they
supposedly.
Wait? One statement was taken at 9 p.m. at night. Hers was taken 9 a.m. the next morning. And I can tell you about taking statements from people who you don't get the statement right then and there. It's not fresh in their mind. So it's
right.
easy for them to make mistakes. But the mistakes that are being made is not on the part of Mr. Merritt, the mistakes are being made on the part of the people who are telling the story, and this is why it's hurting them. This is why it's not good to just, if you have something fresh on your mind, write it down. Don't wait
just
2 days later to write, because it's no longer fresh. So you're going to make mistakes in your statement, and this is what's happened, is a lot of mistakes have been made. In the ideal, the ultimate ideal, is that the ideal that the wife was never questioned. Mm-hmm. Now, the play on
the and then I forgot about the pictures. You know, they supposedly said they took pictures, and they never materialized.
There was no pictures. There were no pictures taken. And even though
no blood work, no autopsy, nothing.
No toxicology, no nothing was taken.
No.
So somebody dropped the ball, or they're used to dealing with cases like this. And if you guys are not familiar with this area, Louisiana is known for its corruption. It's known for the way they politic everything. And with politics, there is a lot of corruption in politics. So this is not the only story that's out there like this. There are lots of them. But because they don't have a lot of the families, and I'm telling you this by what I've gone through, families who don't have the money, they don't have the time, and some of them don't even have the understanding of what has happened and what has taken place. And believe it or not, these different parishes and jurisdictions take everything they can, they take total advantage of a family who's not in the know. And that's why it's so important that we learn a little bit about the law, even though we don't want to, learn a little bit about politics. Because if you don't, things like this can happen. And so glad that Ms. Eckley had the opportunity and had the know-how to go after this whole situation and have her case looked at now, which is a very good thing. Now, I'm get off my soapbox with that. Now, when she said that they said they took pictures, I'm reading the statement. Detailed report from Officer Anthony Darter, and he says on here, I dispatched for an ambulance. Now, he was the one they claimed called the ambulance. He said he called the ambulance. He said, I told Mary, the mother-in-law's name, everything appeared to be in place. Nothing appeared to be moved out of place. I took pictures of the scene. There's no pictures, you guys. He said he took pictures of the scene. There's no pictures. So you know there's got to be something wrong. And when that's why I say it's so good to, whenever you're lying, to have your lie straight. Because, as you know, Ms. Eckley just said, there was no pictures, no autopsy, no pictures taken of the scene. So you already know there's some situations here that's not right. He also stated he talked to the wife. But the ideal is she said she was on the phone with Marcus when he shot himself. But again, if you go back to what you said, Ms. Eckley, let's talk about what you said at the time that you were on the phone with her.
Yeah, she started out by saying they were texting, and now she can't get him to answer. But when I got there the next day, that changed, and she said they were talking, and she heard a loud noise. And I told her, I said, what are you talking about? I said, that's not what you told me. You told me you all were texting, and then you couldn't get him to answer. So from Friday to Saturday, it went from texting to talking.
And sometimes, like you said, when you're trying to make sure your lie is straight, and first of all, you guys, we're not accusing anybody of anything. We're just looking at the evidence that says it's pointing in a whole different direction. And these are documents. I'm sitting here looking at the documents that I've received, and these documents are sworn statements. The ideal that their Miranda rights weren't read to them because all they were doing was taking quote-unquote statements, which could mean that they could be accessory to a situation. I'm not going to claim what it is, but they could be accessory to it or an obstruction to justice on what's taking place. Let's pray that that's not the case for their sake, not for our sake, but for their sake that this is not the case. But we paper after paper, I'm looking at statement after statement, and there's no statement that's really telling us what truly happened. Okay, look at the. Let's talk about the idea that the coroner said he never saw him. No, the investigator, the death investigator. Is that what he called? Am I right, Ms. Royce?
That's what he's called.
Okay. Now, tell us what he claimed that he found that doesn't add up. Do you remember what he found?
I didn't hear you. What did you say?
I said, kind of tell us a little bit about what he found when he went on the scene, when he finally showed up on the scene.
Who, the death investigator?
Exactly.
Oh, I mean, I don't have his notes right in front of me because that's what he sent. He sent notes.
Okay.
But he more or less said the same thing everybody else did, that he was on the phone with his wife saying that he was going to take his life. He described... Mm-hmm. He didn't describe any disfigurement or anything to his face. He said there was a gunshot to the upper palate of his mouth with
mm-hmm.
no, he said a small hematoma in his head. But the thing about that is the person that cut his hair has been cutting his hair for over 10 years, and he went to cut his hair at the funeral home. And he didn't see anything wrong with him because he even went and asked the funeral home employees what happened to him.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't, you know, he that's really all he wrote, that, you know, about him on the phone with her and all that.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk about the idea of what type of gun that was used. And did Okay, I said, let's talk about the type of gun that was used.
I've been told it was a 32 H&R. I can't remember the name of it.
Okay, now, did Marcus own a gun like that?
Not that I knew of.
Okay.
All I knew he had was a 9mm, and I think... he had my dad's old gun, and she had a gun, and his son told his mama, because at first they started telling me something about a .22,
mm-hmm.
and so my grandson's mother asked him, you know, does your daddy have a .22, and he said, yeah, but it's a rifle, and so I said, well, I can really see him, you know, extending his arms with a rifle, doing
mm-hmm.
something with that. So, but then it changed. Then I start hearing something about, you know, what they ended up saying, a .32, but I didn't know of him having a gun like that.
So if he didn't have a gun like that, the question is, where did one come from? And if the kids would know what type of gun he would have too, so they wouldn't have a reason to not tell the truth about that.
Right. I mean, they wouldn't, as kids, they wouldn't really know, but I mean, that particular one knew. He knew
uh-huh.
that his daddy, what his .22 was. He knew what that was.
Mm-hmm. Now, and we're going to get kind of just outright, just kind of talk about this. Now, prior to this, there was an incident that happened probably about a year, maybe about a month or so prior to this or more, where there was an incident where Mr. Merritt had some domestic problems.
Right,
and
he wasn't an angel.
Yeah, and they what I've noticed is that they try to play that up to make it sound like it led up to this, which didn't matter because it happened at a different time where it wouldn't even be something that you even discussed to bring up. But we noticed that about most cases that's dealing with anything that's negative toward us, and I'm saying us, I'm talking about us as African Americans, they always bring up the negative about us. You know, you look at the cases that hit the news, how the first thing they said was, oh, he was arrested for this, when that had nothing to do with the idea that he's no longer here. It didn't happen
That's
at the
exactly
same
right.
time. It didn't happen at the same place. So it has nothing mm-hmm. to do with what happened prior to that. It bothers me. It's almost like a way they're trying to get you to think about him in a negative way instead of thinking about what happened to him and how it happened and how can we
right.
know that sure it happened the way they claim.
Right.
It happened.
And that's what I told Lieutenant Higgins. He's with the St. Landry Parish Crime Stoppers. And, you know, I was talking to him about the January 4th incident. And
mm-hmm.
he turned around and said, oh, well, you knew he had been arrested like a couple of weeks before. I said, yes, I'm well aware of that. I said, and I'm also well aware that in his teen years, like I said, he wasn't an angel. I said, and he never put a gun in his mouth before.
Mm-hmm.
I said, but what does that have to do with what I'm asking you now? I said, and then to further help you along, I was there Christmas. I said,
mm-hmm.
little did I know my son had less than 2 weeks to live.
Exactly. And he didn't show any signs of wanting to
no.
leave the earth. He wasn't
no.
upset about anything. He wasn't mad. He wasn't hollering, screaming, hurting anyone. So, I mean, do you think that he had all of this in the back of his mind to take away his life? I mean, it didn't show any signs, right?
I really don't, because, I mean, a person that's going to take their life, they're not looking toward the future. They're not on the phone with somebody asking them about a job. I mean, why would they? Because they're not going to be here to work it. So why would
exactly.
they even be inquiring about a job that they know, hey, I'm not going to be here to work that job, so why would I even ask about it?
Exactly.
And then why would he do all of that and then take his life? What would
yeah.
devastate him from 12:47 when he was texting with his friend to me getting a call at 6:17 that he's taken his life? What devastated him in those 6 hours that he just decided, well, I just can't live anymore. I can't live anymore. What devastated him in those 6 hours?
Now, if we knew that answer, you know, that would be an awesome
mm-hmm.
answer. Huh? Now,
mm-hmm.
another thing I wanted to ask you, too. Now, would your son, not to say no to leave a note, but would he would have done that? Would that have been something he would have done, even if, say, he wouldn't plan on killing himself? But would
mm-hmm.
actually leaving a note would be something he would do?
Yes, because he wrote things down, like my oldest grandson's mother still has writing of that he wrote to her.
Mm-hmm.
So he would have said something, and if he wouldn't have written an actual note, he would have just sent out a text to all of us, I love you. You know,
mm-hmm.
we would have just all answered him back, I love you too. You know, we wouldn't have thought anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
But he would have reached out to just let us, you know, later on we would have said, that's why he sent us that text. But
mm-hmm.
he wouldn't have done that at that house where his kids could come there and find him, because he was at home supposedly by himself and they weren't there. Now, what
mm-hmm.
if they had forgotten something, you know, and came back home to get it? He wouldn't have done that there for his kids to come in there and find him.
Exactly, exactly. So you can say that your family was like a close-knit family?
Yes, I would go down there every maybe like 2 or 3 months. You know, I'd go to Christmas programs. I'd go to graduations. I went to birthday parties. You know, I was in their lives. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, there was, but I wasn't the kind of person that was in their business. You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, for me to find out something, I would have to be told. I wouldn't, you know, I wasn't in their marriage and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you tell me what you think happened. Can you just kind of give me your scenario, what you thought happened or might think happened to get to where you're at now?
Honestly, I don't think he shot himself. I can't tell you exactly what happened, but I don't know. I don't think he shot himself. But I feel something was done to him, and he wasn't aware of it because, like I said, he was big, and you know, it would have to be something that he wasn't aware of. So, but I don't know what happened. That's why, for almost 3 years, I have dug and dug as deep as I can to try and find out truthfully what really did happen to him. And it's like I've told everybody, it's not that I'm a mother that can't accept that. If it's proven to me beyond a shadow of a doubt that Mark took his life, I can accept that. I will never understand it, but I can accept it because it was his life to take if he wanted to. But if it's not proven to me that he did, then no, I want whoever may have made that decision for him to pay for that.
And I think that makes sense. And the idea that Louisiana has a lot of small towns, and the area where Mr. Merritt lived was a very small town. It's called Leonville. And it's in St. Landry Parish, and it's right outside of Opelousas, and Lafayette is the two big places that are next to it that I know of. And I go there all the time. Matter of fact, I do business in Lafayette a lot. And the people that are there, they're going to be close-knit. They're going to be somebody knows somebody knows somebody. So if something else happened other than what is on paper, then somebody knows it. Now, as far as them talking and telling the story, what happened, what's behind it, that's going to be something the police going to do, because, I mean, the investigators are going to have to do, because they're not going to talk to us. We already basically come to that conclusion that they're not going to talk to us about it. So eventually, the story is going to be told. And like you said, if he did what they said he did, then it's understandable. Life goes on. But if he didn't, something has to be put in place to make sure whoever did this, that justice is served. Justice has to be
served.
That's
right.
No matter who it is.
Right.
If it had anything to do with the characters involved, I call them characters because to me, that's what they are.
Right.
Because you're telling a story that you can't get right. Everybody's telling a different story. Everybody has all different personalities, but nobody wants to tell the truth about what really happened. And after meeting you, Miss Eckley, and after talking about your story and kind of getting to know Marcus through you, I don't think this would, and he loved his children, so I don't think he would have left his children like this. Now, let's talk about the idea, what happened Monday. Let's talk about Friday he passed away. What happened Monday that shocked you?
What happened Monday that shocked me?
Yes.
Pertaining
to the wife.
Oh, my cousins were there. Like I said, when Dave left, the atmosphere changed. And my cousin happened to call me, and she asked, you know, do I need to come? And I said yes. And it was like I felt like just a visitor there. You know, no one was talking to me. No one was saying anything. And come to find out, this happened Friday before I even left Texas. Saturday, his funeral was already planned for the following Saturday. So when I got there, she already knew that I wasn't going to bring Mark home because they had already planned his funeral. I didn't, you know, I had no input into that or anything. And, you know, when my cousin got there, that's what she told her. She was like, you know, I know you're hurt and all. She said, but that lady sitting there on that couch is devastated. That's his mother. and y'all aren't talking to her. You haven't included her in anything. And, mm-hmm. You know, it was, like I said, everything was already planned. And so I had texted her that day because we had gone, you know, like I said, to get the clothes. And I asked where she was, and she said that she was at the police department. And I said, why? And she said, because she had never given a statement. And from there, she had to go to the Social Security office. And I was like, well, why, you know, do you need to notify them? And she said, yeah. Well, later on, you know, I thought about it, and I was like, well, you wouldn't have to notify the Social Security office because, I mean, he wasn't getting any type of benefits. You only notify Social Security if somebody is getting, you know, some type of benefits, and you have to let them know that the person has passed away to stop those benefits. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm like, how can someone have the presence of mind that they're supposedly on the phone with their husband when he takes his life, that you have the presence of mind to go to Social Security to file a claim for death benefits?
Exactly.
I mean, you have to answer questions and everything. I mean, who's in their right state of mind to be able to do that right at that time?
Exactly. And another thing, too, did she have a copy of the death certificate? If it happened,
not to my knowledge, because, you know, both of my parents have passed away, and other people, you know, have told me that death certificates don't come in that fast. I mean, usually the funeral has already taken place and everything, and, you know, and then you get a death certificate. So I don't know how that was done because, you know, like I said, you don't usually have any proof of that as far as the state goes. You know, the death certificate hadn't come in yet.
Mm-hmm. So that's something that's kind of curious that she was able to do that and didn't have any proof of his death.
That's right.
Valid proof, you know, and mm-hmm. a valid proof would have been the death certificate. So mm-hmm. I don't know how that happened that she was at the Social Security office that early. So I mean,
right.
You're right. If you're the wife, you love him no matter what you're going through. He took his life. I don't think that I could be at no Social Security. I don't want to talk to nobody if that
right.
was me. At least
right.
a good 2 or 3 weeks, you know.
Right, right.
Well, but then again, people might handle death differently. You know
right.
what I'm saying? You know,
right.
that's
and then something else that I thought about and I didn't mention, you know, when you were asking when I saw him
mm-hmm.
and it, you know, and then when I started calling, you know, I was like, nobody, I spoke to the funeral director and I told him, nobody will help me. Nobody will answer my questions. I don't even know where Mark was shot. And he said, I saw no evidence of a gunshot wound. And I said, what did you say? And he repeated it. And I said, well, did you see evidence of him being stabbed, beaten? He said, no, I saw no evidence of that either. And I said, well, how did he die? And he said, until I see what they have written on the death certificate, I can't tell you.
So he
handled his, you know, Mark's body and everything, and he told me he nor his embalmer saw any evidence. And I called a good friend of mine after I hung up, you know, and I told her that, and she said, well, call him back because I want to ask him something, and I want you on the phone. So we called him back, and she said, in cases like this, you know, normally isn't there, you know, some type of reconstructive surgery or something that you have to do? And he said, yes, in cases like this that has had to be done. He said, but I can tell you nothing was done to him. There was nothing done to him.
Wow.
So not only did he not see any evidence of him being shot, he didn't have to do anything to try and prepare him where he could be seen.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's
yeah.
kind of funny. I mean, that's kind of not funny, but I'm saying funny in the way of strange. The IBM
mm-hmm.
report said, the report of Kaney Ambulance, the report of Anthony Darnard, The report of the investigator, the death investigator, says that there was splatter on the nightstand. Nobody else mentioned it but them three, that there was splatter on the nightstand. So if his if there was splatter and blood splatter all over the place, and then he gets to the funeral home and there's no blood anywhere, and then they can describe that he was lying in a pool of blood. Was he lying? Was he sitting? You know, these are the little things that we sit down and we went through and analyzed and like, wait a minute, something's not adding up. Now, he can't be lying and sitting at the same time. Now, if you have issues with grammar, I'm not a great speaker, or I'm not that articulate, but when I read something, I visualize it because I am an avid reader. So I visualize it. So if you're telling me in one sentence, you're telling me in one statement that he was lying in a pool of blood, and then on the other statement you say he was sitting, he can't be both. So do we all see the same thing? Or
Right. And then for blood to splatter, where did it come from? Because, I mean, there was nothing wrong with his head. There was nothing wrong with his face. Someone shoots themselves, of course there's going to be blood because it's going to, you know, do something to their head or whatever for it to splatter out. So if there was no evidence of that, where did the blood come from?
Because he said it was a hematoma, which means, if I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong, it should have been like a little bump. It wasn't a hole.
Right.
The hole, he said hematoma, so it might have been like a bump there, if it was. So the bump, you know, that's not a hole. So where did all this blood come from?
Exactly. And if there was a bump, why didn't the barber see this bump when he cut his hair?
Exactly. And these are the things that we noticed in the whole evidence, quote unquote, that they, you know, gave to Miss Eckley, that these are the things that we're like, this doesn't even sound right. Now we're at a point now, and Miss Eckley, kind of tell us who you got in contact with and what they told you that they're doing now.
Oh, I contacted the state police, the attorney general, the FBI, the state attorney for Louisiana. By now it's been like probably over 300 or 400 different entities that I've talked to. Mm-hmm. And like I said, nobody in Louisiana sees anything wrong. You know, they all would say the same thing. Anybody else that I contacted outside of that state, including an author, two authors, as a matter of fact, an agency in New York, someone with a TV show, a young man that's worked tirelessly on the Emmett Till case.
Mm-hmm.
All of these people have the same questions that I do. They all tell me, this doesn't make sense to me. Something's not right. You know, none of them have handled me like she just can't accept it. They have all said something's not right. That includes an investigator in Canada, one in New Mexico, one in Ohio. All of them say something's not right here.
And that's and like we said, there is, and it's agreeable together that there's something not right in this situation. Now, Ms. Eckley, can you basically tell us how we can contact you? Give us his website, because
He has a website that a friend of mine made up, and it's called MarcusMerrittSenior.com.
Mm-hmm.
You can go there. You can read the timeline of, you know, everything so far that's happened. You can read comments of, you know, family and friends and, you know, how it's affected us, and, you know, but, and my phone number is on there, and if, you know, if anybody knows anything and wants to anonymously get in touch with me or the person that created it, she even set up a phone number that's, you know, it will ring to my phone, but it's not my actual phone number. And mm-hmm. it's also a an email there that, you know, people can, you know, reach out to me through that also.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank you so much for your time. I want to thank the audience for listening in. You guys, this story is not over with. We will be back on here talking about the follow-up of what happened to this whole situation, and hopefully we're going to get justice. Again, I want to thank you for listening to Red Journal Radio. I want to thank my guests. You guys have a great night and have a safe weekend, and I want to say bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.